So I try to summarize something which perhaps it's worth to discuss according to my point of view for what is the content of the session we have been just finishing now. And I selected the three main topics. Feel free to enter at any moment with your question. So we have seen that there are different approaches to discuss the two-body scattering problem. And first of all, one has to distinguish between conservative scattering and including radiation reaction effects. So the first interesting point of view should be perhaps that of analytic computation done by using cell force. Let's say conservative cell force, first order cell force along hyperbolic orbits. So why up to now we have not yet obtained these results, which seems to be very important now, especially because going at high PN orders, several hereditary contributions mix, and it's very difficult to add them one by one. And so perhaps also in this case, conservative but also dissipative cell force may play an important role. I can try to give you a first answer, and then I will leave you to enter this discussion. So in principle, we know what to do. Let's say about the conservative cell force. We need simply to generalize the Barak and Sago prescriptions, which are valid for elliptic-like orbits, to the case of hyperbolic-like orbits. I wonder if there are subtleties and perhaps something is missing in this simplified picture. So the hyperbolic motion in the Schwarzschild background is well known, but when you study the scattering problem, your solution, your exact solution, writes in terms of elliptic function. And you know that the geodesics of the background spacetime should be given as a source of the perturbation equations. So if you keep the elliptic function solution as they are, perhaps you can work better numerically, but from a computational point of view and analytical point of view, this is not apparently very helpful. And what one needs is to expand this solution conveniently. Conveniently, according to what we have been doing up to now in studying PN, PM scattering angle, means perhaps a large expansion, a large eccentricity expansion limit. You can do this. I can show you that this is not a problem. You can even PN expand this solution, but the main difference in comparison with what we did with elliptic-like orbits is that the expression you have to manage with are very, very large, much more large than in the previous case. Imagine when you are circular, you have a direct delta centered at the radius of this orbit. If you correct this, including eccentricity correction, you add derivatives to your delta, but still, what is the source of the perturbation is treated easily, and the delta are doing a good job as usual. So this is the first step. I mean, can be difficult to handle with the elliptic function, and then maybe it's better to consider a moderately high PN expansion of this solution. I don't know the answer. This is a question. I've not been working on this, but I tried to summarize what I know on this analytics effort computation to see if some effort can be done. I don't know if the larger centricity expansion is all necessary, and perhaps one can be satisfied with the PN expansion only of the geodesic solutions. But to my experience, when working in the Fourier domain, this larger centricity expansion plays a central role. It's somehow necessary. And then the parametrization of the orbit, when we were working in the bound motion case, we were using a parametrization like this. This is the parametrization adapted to the motion. And I don't know if this parametrization is still the good one in the case of the hyperbolic motion. Maybe it is. So what we have to do when we deal with the perturbations working alla Regge Wheeler Zerilli or La Teukolsky is to solve the Einstein's equations for the perturbed metric and directly inject the perturbed solution in what we want to compute, which has to do with the geodesics, regularized somehow as we did in the previous case about the orbits. What is the difference now? Now the main difference, according to me, which can create technical difficulties, is the fact that the spectrum now runs over infinite values. Previously, in the bound case, we had only a few frequencies. When arriving at the level which we reached in eccentric perturbation in Schwarzschild eccentricity 2d8, we had some 20 frequency to consider and centered at deltas. So the integration over delta was never done, actually. It was done by the deltas, and this was a big simplification. What happens in the hyperbolic case? In the hyperbolic case, perhaps we can see some frequency which dominate the spectrum if we are doing a PN expansion, like the one I wrote here. And in general, we can do what it's typical for this kind of computation, to distinguish between the low frequency and the high frequency, and then try to use something which is like the method of the regions. When I said that something is missing in this picture, and I will use just a few more minutes, is the generalization of the Barak and Sago procedure valid for hyperbolic orbits. Let's briefly remind you how we write the perturbed for velocity of our body with this this correction in the fully contravariant form. And then we have for the various perturbations these relations for the delta E, the temporal component, the phi component, and the radial component can be obtained by the normalization conditions for the four velocity. So three relations. And you see the normalization the conditions uses also the energy and the angular momentum perturbations. We can work with the Barak and Sago normalization, these at variables simply related to the previous general one. And then we have to solve the equations, the energy and the angular momentum when there is this cell force which drives the right-hand sides of these equations. But when solving, for instance, the conservative case, we have to fix, in this case, in these two cases, the integration constants. This is very well discussed in the case of elliptic-like orbits, but in the very few papers appearing on hyperbolic-like cell force computation, this is never explicit, of course. We can discuss this, one has to think. In the bound case, it was enough to impose the vanishing of the radial corrections to the geodesics at the periastron and the apoastron. This gives two conditions, and then you determine these two integration constants. Now you have only the periastrans, the minima approach, let's say, and then you can go at the R going to infinity at, asymptotically far from the old. And still, this perhaps necessitate special attention. I can only say that I found a discussion in the seminal paper of 2009 by Thibaut Damour, but everything is very general and perhaps needs to be reformulated when we are thinking in the explicit computations like this one. So imagine that we are able to completely solve this problem, and then we can work as we did in the background space-time, take the phi equation, the radial equation, take the ratio, use the parametrization we want, and integrate for the corrections. But it seems to me that still all the necessary steps in this case have not received the same clear procedure as in the bound case. So this perhaps is a break for me to attempt really seriously this computation, and I think also for other people, because in the literature, in spite of the fact that this kind of computation can be really important, because the scattering angle can give information about the local and the non-local structure of the scattering angle. And at IPN, we can test post-Minkowskian results at IPM. And now we are limited in this test by the fact that we can reach only the first few PN orders. So one thing is the first moral principle of Wheeler, and the other perhaps is the courage, which seems still everything is not ready to start the computation, at least from my point of view. So I asked the preliminary, since this persons are here and have been working on this, their point of view, if they would like to share their ideas on this point. But everybody can, of course, contribute. I stop here. I use the 12 minutes, so that's your call now.
Hi, Donato.
Hi, Leor.
So I feel that as if people are looking at me, maybe. So we're...
yes, let me stop sharing.
No, yeah, well, maybe. Okay, so...
Please, you ask, I share again.
Yeah, so we have seen, so yeah, we are slow, as you know, but we have seen some progress on the cell side. And I think there aren't, any insurmountable obstacles to getting the self-false results. So I wasn't quite sure about several of the things that you mentioned as obstacles. So you could see we have two parallel avenues, one time domain, another frequency domain. It's going well, and we'll get the results at some point soon, hopefully. So we can go point by point, maybe, and maybe we'll try to explain what the issues you see are there. So so of course we are doing a numerical calculation of the full effect without any expansion, without PN or PM. But as we heard today, Kunal is doing a PM analytical expansion of the self-force result, and I don't think anyone is doing the PN expansion, but this is something that could be done. Maybe Chris Kavanagh is the right person to tell us how realistic the prospects are there. But the numerical calculation is going okay.
Indeed, I'm sure.
So we have, if we were looking, you were asking about expressions for the scatter angle with the cell force in it. We have those. It's not hard to write them down.
How difficult is extracting then analytical information from this? I mean, if you do computation with a very high number of digits, then perhaps we can fit your results and obtain analytical information. Differently, we should try to do ourselves analytical computation with the difficulties I mentioned.
These are the two things that Chris is cooking.
So Chris is busy.
These are two things that people, of course, have been doing in the past. Either do really accurate numerical calculations and then sort of do clever extraction of the Poissontonian expressions from those. That's a possibility in the future.
How far is this future?
Oh, yes. Well, I don't know. So we probably will get results, not with the 200 decimal places, but maybe with 6 in the next 6 months or something like that, in both calculations, perhaps. So time domain, frequency domain. It's important for us to do it in two different ways so that we can, check ourselves. But then to, crank up the accuracy and get to ridiculous. You need concentrated effort on that, and that's for the future. But I guess a better way would be to do an analytical expansion of the cell force formulas of the relevant integrals, and we saw an example of that earlier today in a PM context. So that's maybe a better way to approach this. Chris, the question was about the prospects of doing a PN expansion of cell force in a scattering setup. If you have any thoughts about that.
So you mean also putting in a low velocity assumption as well as being unbound? Is that what you mean?
Can you hear me? Yes, but can you say that again? Can you say that again without an Irish accent, please? Thank you.
Do you, when you say doing a PN expansion of scattering, do you mean like also putting in a low velocity assumption?
Yes, that's a good question. As far as I understand, I don't actually understand the distinction between PN and PM in this context. There is only really one type of expansion, right?
Sure, but you can always expand the PM results in the low velocity limit, right?
Well, you mean low velocity at infinity?
Can I say something really quickly?
Am I wrong? Yes.
Let me just pull up my slides really quickly. I think it might be a problem with using the post-Newtonian approximations when you have the post-Minkowskian regime. Let me just pull it up, but. When you talk about the weak field, and I talked about the weak field, let me share my screen really quickly.
It's the point that you made earlier that your velocity can't be very too small, because otherwise you get too close to the black hole. You're precisely right. Yes, it's a point actually I made to Chris in a conversation yesterday. Go ahead.
So when you do the post-Newtonian treatment, you have to say V squared is on the scale of M over B, and then you expand V in the same way that you expand the weak metric. However, if V is small, in this case, again, the post-Newtonian thing used the virial limit to say that V is small, and then you have a bound orbit, but in scattering, you need V to be big enough so it's not bound. And V needs to be bigger than M over B to get this proper like kind of scattering angle, as opposed to in the post-Newtonian limit, you need V to be small. So what I found is if you do the self-force calculation, if you go over here and you take our results in the lower left-hand corner and you expand these cell force results at low velocity, you actually do end up getting the same result that Fenning and Poisson got in their 2002 paper. And that's fine. You can use the post-Minkowskian result for the cell force to get your post-Newtonian results also. However, when it comes to the deflection angle, you do need V squared to be big enough to allow it to deflect. If V squared is small, if you think of V almost at zero, right, the particle is going to fall right into the star. And if you make V a little bit bigger than zero, the particle is going to do like a 180. It's not really going to scatter smally compared to the to the background metrics. So that, I think you can get the post-Newtonian cell force from the post-Minkowskian cell force, but getting the deflection angle is a little bit trickier.
Yeah. So I entirely agree with that. And I think as far as the scattering angle is concerned, expansion in 1 over b is not very good, perhaps, because you can get you can have an arbitrarily large impact parameter with very small periastron distance. And so you might think you're in the weak field if you are at large b, but you aren't, because your orbit course is very close to the black hole. So maybe an expansion in inverse angular parameter is more appropriate. But there's only really one thing we can expand in. I mean, we have to, so you were talking about expansion in velocity at infinity, but that doesn't guarantee that the velocity remains small all along, of course. So I think maybe fundamentally there's only one thing to expand in, which is G or 1 over L or PM expansion. You can artificially sort of expand that in a small velocity at infinity at the end and call that PM, but I don't see the purpose for that. I don't know if what I'm saying makes perfect sense to
you. Yeah, it sort of makes sense to me, but I feel like I must be missing something, you know, because De Moore had a paper last year on this angular momentum loss, and, you know, there's a PM calculation, but he got an answer and he expanded at small velocity and it agreed with the, you know, PM calculation he did in the 80s with Dirill, you know, and it's like, maybe there's some deep reason why it has to, or maybe it's just the math happens to agree, but physically it's really very different. I don't.
Yes, besides the question that I have. Yeah, I don't know why. But is Thibault here actually? He was here earlier.
Yes, I'm here. Yes.
Hello.
I'm not just sure to have intelligent further comments to do.
But maybe we can relay the question to you again in a more specific way and see what you think about it. So my question, I think maybe Sam has a similar issue, is that expanding in 1 over b at fixed energy doesn't necessarily put you in large b in this expansion doesn't necessarily mean that you're in weak field. Because if the energy is sufficiently small, you can get very close to the black hole, even if your impact parameter is very large. So.
Yes. I mean, when you do, as you know, analytical work, you have the functions you are dealing with, the solutions will be well approximated by a series expansion, a double series expansion in G and 1 over C. And until you have the non-locality that one has to deal with separately. But even, you know, with non-locality, it still makes sense to have both G expansion and PN expansion. I don't see a problem there, okay.
So the velocity we are referring to in the PN expansion is velocity at infinity?
At infinity.
Yeah, but this is also large impact parameter. So by definition, the velocity at the closest point will be, parametrically close to this velocity.
So my point would be exactly that if your energy is sufficiently small, or if your velocity at infinity is sufficiently small, then actually you can have very large impact parameter and very small periastron. So the velocity can get very high at some point. And you'll get all the strong field effects acting on your orbit and presumably affecting your scatter angle.
Yeah, I mean, another way of saying this is the small angle scattering result, you know, as you know, is gm over b v squared, you know, v squared in the denominator. So that seems to be the small parameter.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But as you know, if you count separately, like some people say it's forbidden, but actually it is not, dimension full parameters like g and the velocity of light, okay, you can go very far by considering these as two independent parameters. And then it means physically that you are still not very far from, you can be PN and be close to virial theorem, but with some margin, or you introduce scaling of parameters. I mean, until there are explicit calculations where one sees where the non-locality, it's only for the non-local terms that you have a breakdown of post-Newtonian in the sense that your Green's function has to extend over large time distances. And then you have to be careful in using some versions of the method of regions to separate this. But I don't see a problem with these G and C expansions technically.
Technically we can do that, but I suspect we won't get good agreement with self-force results, for example, if we did that, unless the energy is not too small. So.
Sure, yeah. But we know that. We will get a good agreement. Don't worry, you will get a good agreement. But you want to get results in a different regime. No, you want to show things where you have strong field scattering, really to exhibit new effects.
So I can have strong field scattering with very large B, arbitrarily large B. If I go to sufficiently small energy. I mean, in the paper that we wrote, Thibaut, we had B equals infinity. This is yes. Marginally bound B equals infinity. And it's a very strong field orbit.
There is a hand raised by Leo.
Yeah, actually, I mean, I'm extremely not knowledgeable in this topic. So I just want to understand. Well, I want to know whether or not I understand what you're talking about correctly. I mean, there's a real physical effect that can happen that you can start with positive energy and unbound orbit, and then radiation reaction causes you to capture onto a bound orbit, right? And so is that somehow supposed to be encoded in the scattering calculation? I mean, yeah, I don't see how the, you know, crossing over from positive energy to negative energy can be found in a perturbative, is it found in a perturbative calculation?
Probably not.
That looks like a somewhat similar problem as the transition from plunge to bound orbits. Well, it isn't actually. That's a completely smooth transition, so I'm not sure. You wouldn't see it in a single calculation, but I would expect everything to be nice and continuous along the transition.
So that transition from unbound to bound, right? You have to be near parabolic, of course. That is totally approachable from a weak field perturbative perspective. And in fact, I can think of, for example, a paper by Blanchet and Schaefer from the 90s, I think, where they computed this in post-Newtonian, like the critical, like how close to a parabolic orbit do you need to be to lose enough energy during the passage to become bound? And that they did entirely within post-Newtonian framework, and that regime is accessible, and the formalism is perfectly valid there. The other one Martin mentioned, like, okay, in spiral to plunge, that's completely different. Yes, that is a very much non-perturbative strong field thing.
Sorry, just can I ask about the first thing that you said? Is there a post-Minkowski version of that calculation, or is it only a post-Newtonian version of that calculation?
So the post-Minkowskian approach has, let's just say, within the last year or so, reached dissipative effects at all. And they have computed the leading post-Minkowskian order radiation reaction effects. So in fact, Thibault should perhaps take over this question. But I would say yes, that in the same way as for post-Newtonian, there is a regime where this formalism post-Minkowskian is going to be valid. And using results that they in fact already have for radiation at third post-Minkowskian order, you could get the leading post-Minkowskian approximation for where this transition from unbound to bound is. Please chime in.
By the way, I have a question for Leo also. Yeah. Thibault speaking. Are you going to compute separately the conservative scattering and the radiation reacted one, or?
Yes, so the nice thing is that when you do a self-host calculation, you have both together and separate, and you can do both calculations.
Yes.
For the price of one, yeah.
And so you will do both?
Yes.
Yes, just to check.
Sure. So the dissipation is probably can be done already today by at least one person, Seth Hopper, because he has this code that can calculate fluxes, right, from hyperbolic orbits.
Numerically, you mean?
Yes, but we can do fits and things like that.
So if you're going to actually compute dissipative scattering of angles in strong field, I mean, do you even know what you're computing is well defined? I mean, you know, super translation ambiguities and gauge and yada yada. I mean, what are we even talking about?
Yeah, so we are quite safe if we don't have radiation. And then when we do, we have to start thinking about things like that. But so we haven't thought about this very carefully, only a little. And I don't know if Beatrice is here, but she helped convince me that at perturbative order, there shouldn't be a problem. Being certain about which frame you are in terms of BMS ambiguity at perturbative order. I'll need to reconstruct the discussion I had with her to convince myself now again of that. But intuitively, if you are in Schwarzschild and you have an equatorial orbit, and I can't see where the ambiguity would come from, even if you had the radiation. I should say that numerical relativity is doing this kind of calculations now. Hannes Rutter and Hald. So that's another interesting comparison to be done. And then when we do that, then really these issues will kick in. And we need to understand them.
And has anyone analyzed in a PM expansion at what order you have to worry about the super translation or some other ambiguity? Exactly. I mean, it seems like the conservative dynamic scattering angle is very well defined, but beyond that, I don't even know what the definition is.
So whatever problems we'll have, they will have as well, that's for sure.
But are they good, but do they know what order it happens at, right? I mean, has this been done? I just want the reference because I don't know where to start, you know?
Justin, has anyone thought about these things in PM?
Well, as I was saying, I mean, I think it's pretty much settled about, let's say, the scattering angle at the third post-Minkowskian order, the complete observable one, so at least including both conservative and dissipative effects. Again, Thibaut would be better able to comment on this because he's the one that first calculated it.
Yes, but as you know, people like Gabriele, by the way, there was recently a meeting at the Galileo Galilei Institute where all these issues have been discussed at length. And the fact that the angular momentum loss is directly linked to the memory, which means in the usual language, a change in BMS frame, shows that there are the subtleties do not seem, I mean, at this stage, subtleties, conceptual subtleties do not seem to prevent anything, but some people worry about indeed the fact that why the angular momentum loss is at g square, that if you use other things, you would expect g cube. Okay. I think perturbation, PM perturbation theory is more solid than what some people think.
Wait, is there someone saying that the 2PM angular momentum loss doesn't happen? Is that a credible claim?
It's not a claim. What there is a remark in a paper by Gabriele. I mean, Gabriele knows that the result is correct, that the one I got with the G-square angular momentum loss, and it has been verified and completed. But yeah, then he's writing a paper now where apparently maybe they fix the BMS frame in a way that the memory is canceled. I mean, if you change things between I minus minus, I minus plus, and all that, then you might expect something else. But the calculation is actually straightforward.
Okay, but it could be that there's sort of two competing notions of angular momentum at 2PM order, and one is
yeah,
lost.
The subtlety, which I've been emphasizing all the way, I mean, starting with our paper with Nathalie Deruel in 1981. if I remember well, is that you need to talk. I mean, I don't trust any of the papers, you know, speaking of fluxes and on scry and all that. Okay, they are really up in the air. You know, you are interested in the mechanical angular momentum of the system, and if you use only things at infinity, then you have an ambiguity because you are at infinity, okay? PM computations are always rooted in the hard particles, the massive particles, and they take into account the soft gravitons emitted. And therefore, as far as I know, I mean, and with my experience, this is a way of resolving the so-called, you know, BMS ambiguities. And by the way, I don't think that there is a BMS is a symmetry group. I think it's only because if you only look at things at infinity that it becomes a symmetry, but that the full thing has only the Poincaré symmetry and therefore well-defined. You know also that there is the issue of the Christodoulou-Kleinermann thing and all that. I mean, there is no proof that scry is well defined, okay? And actually in some calculation long ago, I had shown that it is not smooth. I mean, the conformal structure is not smooth. When you do scattering calculations, okay? When you do scattering calculation, you get a breakdown of scry plus.
With massive particles, right?
Sorry?
Scattering with massive particles.
With massive particles.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
With massive particles, yes. And by the way, Justin also might have alluded to an older work by Walker and Will in 1979, where they had shown that scry minus also is bad when you have incoming particles, okay?
Since there are only a few more minutes for this discussion section, maybe we can ask Mikhail Solon if he can comment about what kind of expectation we can have at G4. concerning the radiation part of the Hamiltonian or the scattering. What's the status of the art at this point?
Yeah, so maybe just to give some context, like I said in my talk, the G4 result that we have only considers the local part, the, I don't know what you guys call it. We call it the potential region, which is near zone and instantaneous, basically a potential. And so it's we're lacking the contributions from radiative effects, even for conservatives such as the tail. And there's no real particular reason why we did that. It's just the formalism that we're trying to build separates the two. And so now we're looking into incorporating the other one, the radiation sector. The integrand is straightforward to get. Integrals should be not as hard, because actually the harder part is actually for integrating the potential region. However, some things that we need to think about are, for example, as Thibaut said, for the local piece, there are no such issues, but for the non-local terms, it can be more subtle, especially when we're dealing with amplitudes. This is something that we have to look at for the first time, basically asking ourselves how the non-local pieces arise and whether we can, how to transcribe that to the bound case. So previously, all the local pieces, pretty straightforwardly, once you compute using amplitudes, you can map to a potential because you know which parts of your answer depend on the scattering trajectory and which ones don't, basically by construction. Whether this is true or not for the non-local pieces is something we have to consider once we, in this calculation. But yeah, I have no definite update for you guys, except we are definitely trying to complete the calculation with radiative effects. So trying to sniff out the tail first. It's definitely easier to just compute everything, but then it would include other things that we might not want if we want to have or like compare, for example, a Hamiltonian or so on. So we're weighing these options of whether computing the whole thing together or separating the different pieces. And then there is also this question of the non-locality. I don't know if you guys have any comments on that. If you're wondering whether there are, concrete bottlenecks or whatever, it's hard to say until we're really, right now everything is going. So nothing disastrous to report,
Mikhail, yeah. Just in the spirit of helping you in checking your results with Donato and Andrea Geralico, we are currently using Tutti Frutti results to complete your potential graviton contribution by what is missing, okay? Just to have some PN, it's a PN expanded information, but just to have something to compare.
This is on top of what you already had in previous
papers? Yes, paper. Yes.
So you're going to higher PN order?
Yes, we are.
See that would be definitely great.
Transcribe what we have in a form which can be directly used by you and with other results. Okay, we are trying to finish this result.
Can you expand more on your first sentence? What do you mean by transcribe more to a form that we can directly use? I thought you already had scattering angles that we can use. In the previous papers, if I remember, you had scattering angles.
We are trying to include all the missing things. Radiation graviton part, which was implicitly included in our previous work. So we are not adding to this, but we want to separate it to make easier for you to see what you should get.
Yeah.
And include everything we can compute of radiation reaction parts now, separately. So that you have something PN expanded, but something to look at.
That sounds great, yeah.
I think we have one more minute. Since I have seen the title of the review of Justin, including some priorities, and I have seen the table with some missing block, some missing result, I would like to ask Justin, in the chat we have seen something. What, according to you, we could compute to help you in filling this table as soon as possible.
Okay, let me share my screen quickly if I can. And sorry. One moment. You surprised me.
But I'm sorry, this is already 1:17. I think we should really move to the other session. Probably we can continue in the Slack channel or in chat. And there is also a conference social session